bombs to Israel. So when we talk about cutting off aid to the Ukraine, we're still spending Americans' money for bombs for killing children in Gaza and now in the West Bank as well. None of that was mentioned at all.
In this last minute we have, Dr. Hamawi, you've talked about the devastation of the impact of the cuts to USAID, and also Dr. Abu Safia, who headed Kamal Adwan, the pediatrician, who is still being held by Israel. Any thoughts or do you know about his whereabouts?
I don't know about his whereabouts. And, you know, he is, again, an example of, you know, the arbitrary way that they take prisoners and hold them hostage without any, you know, proper care at all. They have no concern for international law. They've been targeting doctors and nurses since the beginning of war. Over 500 healthcare workers have been killed or been taken prisoner since the start of this. So a complete disregard for any international norms or rules of war. And with the, you know, prisoner exchanges that were supposed to happen, multiple times they stated that they would probably release them, but that has not come through. And
we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank you for being with us. And of course, we'll continue to cover this issue as we do every day. Dr. Adam Hamawi, a reconstructive surgeon and Army veteran who volunteered in Gaza, and New Jersey Democratic Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman. They both attended President Trump's joint session address. I'm with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through April, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our fantastic programmers, including specials for Black History Month and International Women's Day. If you'd like to check out our specials, go to kboo.fm/ATNF4.
Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. The Metal March returns again in 2025, featuring 10 hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give to donate. And tune in to the Metal March, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Metal Marathon, only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, President Trump's address to Congress inspired a walkout by Oregon congresswomen.
Multnomah County reports an uptick in dysentery cases.
And Portlanders protest Tesla, asking the state to divest state retirement funds from the company.
Good evening. Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. I am Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Josh Salem. President Donald Trump addressed Congress yesterday in his first primetime speech of his second term. Democrats became so incensed that some walked out the door. Trump tried to portray a nation in the midst of a dramatic comeback, saying his administration is fighting back against a Democratic woke agenda. Democrats pushed back against the president, his cabinet, and unelected advisor Elon Musk. As in many states across the country, Oregon has seen packed town halls and large protests following Trump's first month in office. The upheaval has come in response to a number of Trump's early policies, from immigration to foreign policy to firing large portions of the federal workforce. Some Democrats turned their backs on the president during his speech, Some held up signs criticizing the administration, and some walked out of the chamber. Oregon Democrats had already voiced concerns about a variety of ways the administration's policies are negatively impacting the state. Wildfire research has been paused, and funds for local transportation and housing projects are on hold. In addition, mass firings have affected the U.S. Forest Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the Bonneville Power Administration. Lori Chavez de Reamer, an Oregon Republican who lost her congressional reelection bid last November, was sitting in the front row during Trump's address. Trump has nominated Chavez de Reamer for the job of Labor Secretary. A Senate committee voted last week to advance her to a full Senate vote, but she has not yet been confirmed.
Oregon Congresswomen Maxine Dexter and Andrea Salinas were among a group of Democrats who walked out during Donald Trump's 100-minute address to Congress last night. Salinas said, quote, "Tonight, President Trump spewed more lies and continued to ignore the reality that his policies are hurting working families, not helping them." Representative Janelle Bynum, Susan Bonaducci, and Val Hoyle, as well as Senator Jeff Merkley, all brought recently fired federal employees as their guests to the speech. During the address, Senator Merkley said on the social media platform X, "Candidate Trump promised lower prices, but President Trump's reckless blanket tariffs will raise prices even higher for families in Oregon and across the country. This is Trumpflation at work," end quote. Instead of attending the speech, Senator Ron Wyden held a virtual town meeting that was attended by 4,000 people. Wyden said that Oregonians are, quote, "worried about the cost of groceries, gas, and electric bills, and Donald Trump and Elon Musk don't seem to know much about those issues," end quote.
The Supreme Court upheld a lower court order that said some $2 billion in U.S. foreign aid funding frozen by the Trump administration should be resumed. That means the federal government cannot withhold payment to foreign aid organizations for work they already performed. Those payments were for humanitarian work, and thousands of workers have been laid off as a result of the funding freeze. In the 5-4 vote, the court's three liberal judges were joined by Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Amy Coney Barrett. The court's order said that the trial judge, who had ordered the government to resume payments, quote, should clarify what obligations the government must fulfill. Lauren Bateman, an attorney with Public Citizen Litigation Group, said, quote, "Today's ruling by the Supreme Court confirms that the administration cannot ignore the law. To stop needless suffering and death, the government must now comply with the order issued 3 weeks ago to lift its unlawful termination of federal assistance," end quote. It's a short-term loss for the Trump administration, and the nonprofit groups who sued to block the decision still have yet to be paid. A follow-up hearing is scheduled at the lower court tomorrow.
As the Trump administration attempts its mass deportation campaign, many of those being charged by the Department of Homeland Security are left to face immigration courts alone. Judith Ruiz Branch spoke with one reporter who covers the immigration courts in Chicago, sharing her experience seeing firsthand the barriers people are facing trying to navigate the system.
As the Trump administration's deportation efforts continue, more people find themselves in immigration court. A reporter who covers these courts in Chicago shares her impressions. Immigration law is complicated, and most immigrants who navigate the court system do so by themselves. Reporter Kelly Garcia with Injustice Watch says the lack of legal representation and language barriers add to the complexity. Garcia says almost no one she's encountered in the Chicago court speaks English, yet all the signs and case sheets are in English. Many show up late or miss their hearings because of this.
If you miss your court hearing, the judge can order your removal. So These barriers have very serious consequences for people, and it's very sad, honestly. It's very sad to witness that.
Garcia says it's a misconception that most immigrants speak Spanish. She's heard many other languages, from Arabic to Creole to Mandarin, and says most people don't know that they need to request a court interpreter in advance of their hearing or risk having their case delayed. Those who show up late or not at all could be immediately removed from the country. Research shows those with legal representation fare better in court, but people in immigration court don't have the right to an attorney if they can't afford one. The burden of proof to show that they were charged incorrectly or request temporary relief through asylum falls on them. Groups like the National Immigrant Justice Center and Legal Aid Chicago are on site to help address some gaps. As the daughter of an immigrant, Garcia says she can relate to the range of emotions she sees in court.
It just feels very personal to me because I know how it impacted my mom. I know how hard and difficult that was for her. And I also recognize that it's only gotten harder for a lot of people, especially for people who have migrated in very dangerous conditions here.
Garcia says she's seen that many people come to the U.S. for reasons beyond their control. She says her time covering the immigration court has prompted her to work on creating an explainer to help answer the many questions she hears from defendants every day. For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
Dysentery cases are on the rise in Portland, according to data from the Multnomah County Health Department. Dysentery is a highly contagious bacterial infection caused by the Shigella bacterium. Symptoms include bloody diarrhea, fever, cramps, and vomiting. Shigella spreads person to person through contact with infected fecal matter. Many people get it by touching infected surfaces and then touching their mouths. You can also get it from eating food cooked by someone infected with the bacterium. Multnomah County Health Department logged 40 cases in January. The same month last year saw only 17 cases. Dysentery outbreaks are less common in places with adequate plumbing. It's more common to find Shigella cases in people who have recently traveled from places where plumbing resources are harder to come by. But these new data show local cases are increasing. The health department told KABU that a Shigella strain introduced to Oregon last spring may be partly to blame. Public health experts say a lack of access to shelter, restrooms, and hand-washing stations may contribute to disease spread. The health department says that one-third to one-half of cases in the past year were among people experiencing houselessness. Cases are also rising among people who use opiate and methamphetamine drugs. Dr. Amanda Risser is a senior medical director for Central City Concern, a Portland nonprofit that provides health care and housing services. She told the Oregonian, quote, "Any situation where you are unable to wash your hands regularly will put you at risk for Shigella, and I think unsheltered homelessness certainly contributes to people just really not having places to do that," end quote.
The Oregonian has also spoke with John Towns, Medical Director for Infectious Prevention and Control at Oregon Health and Science University. Towns said, quote, "If you want to stop an outbreak of Shigella, you give people toilets and soap and water," end quote. Dysentery infections began rising in 2012. By 2017, the county reported 17 cases. By 2024, the number increased to 158. The health department highlighted the vital role housing plays in health. They said in an email, "Housing is related to nearly all aspects of health, including infectious disease. Lacking housing creates a context that can increase the disease of multiple kinds of infectious diseases. When you don't have housing, it's harder to prevent infectious disease and harder to access care that treat diseases compared to if you are housed," end quote. The county is providing short-term housing for those who test positive. To prevent spread, the health department recommends washing hands often, especially after using the bathroom. If infected, they advise people to, quote, "avoid preparing food, limit sexual contact, and stay out of pools or other common bodies of water for at least 2 weeks after symptoms stop." People who work with food, childcare and healthcare facilities should be restricted from work until they test negative. Those who use drugs should avoid sharing drug paraphernalia for 2 weeks and to thoroughly clean paraphernalia.
Democrats sue to prevent Trump's takeover of the Federal Elections Commission. A privatized postal service could make mail-in voting more difficult. And states move ahead with their own versions of the Equal Rights Amendment. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have accomplished more in 43 days than most administrations accomplished in 4 years or 8 years, and we are just getting started.
In a contentious address to Congress Tuesday night, President Donald Trump touted his actions at the border, tariffs, and efforts to root out government waste. A Democratic member was ejected after shouting that Trump had no mandate. After that, Trump criticized his opponents in the chamber. Just 6 weeks into his presidency, thousands of federal workers have been fired and programs cut, provoking dozens of lawsuits. Since he announced tariffs on Canada and Mexico, the stock market has fallen sharply. One Trump executive order takes control of all independent agencies, including the Federal Election Commission. Democrats have sued, warning Trump could have partisan influence on elections. Former FEC Chairwoman Ellen Weintraub says Trump wants to prevent the public from knowing who's funding political candidates.
There is already too much dark money in our system, and without an FEC, there would be even more. Basically, all of it would be dark, and there would be no one out there to enforce the law.
Voting rights advocates say a Trump plan to take over the Postal Service could put blocks in the way of mail-in voting, which he's accused of being riddled with fraud. Brian Renfro with the National Association of Letter Carriers says the public's confidence in mail-in voting is tied to its trust in postal workers.
I think it's very clear this administration has no interest in protecting public service, working people, or really the public good.
Civil rights groups say they're alarmed by the SAVE Act, which would require in-person proof of citizenship with a birth certificate or passport to register to vote. Driver's licenses, military, student, or tribal IDs would not be accepted. And Sarah Harris with the nonprofit Stand Up America says a passport can cost hundreds of dollars.
This in itself is essentially a poll tax, because updating these documents costs money and time, and we shouldn't have to pay anything, even if it means getting a passport, to vote.
Meanwhile, House GOP leaders have advised their members to avoid in-person public town hall events in their districts as protests against government cuts spread nationwide. Maine Governor Janet Mills says the state expects to sue the Trump administration for attacks on transgender athletes. Dusty Homan Sprague with Maine Women's Lobby says activists there and in other states are working to expand protections in the state's constitution now that the federal Equal Rights Amendment won't be enacted.
There is a lot of energy because people are seeing that their rights are at stake right now, and they want to do everything that they can to protect those rights in Maine's constitution.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on immigrant justice and Oregon's Sanctuary Promise Act with Cedra Pearson from the Rural Organizing Project. Then we'll get a dose of local arts news with Laura Grimes from Arts Watch. At 6, it's Alternative Radio. Then at 7, the Global Sale. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 56. Today in history, in 1770, five Americans were fatally shot by British troops in the Boston Massacre, a key event that would lead to the outbreak of the American Revolutionary War. The quote of the day is from American computer scientist and Navy Rear Admiral Grace Hopper, who said, quote, "The most dangerous phrase in the language is, we've always done it this way."
In President Trump's address to Congress on Tuesday, he touted his executive order to rename Denali the highest mountain in North America and used a pejorative term in reference to Senator Elizabeth Warren. With those stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Donald Trump, in his more than 1 hour and a half speech to Congress Tuesday night, touted his executive action since taking office 6 weeks ago and said, "We're just getting started." Among actions he mentioned were the federal hiring freeze, creating the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, headed by Elon Musk, and renaming Denali to Mount McKinley in Alaska. Since taking office in January, tribal leaders from across the country have been raising concerns about the administration's actions. The hiring freeze and the mass firing of government employees with the help of DOGE has tribal leaders worried about essential services in tribal communities, saying there could be devastating impacts, including to healthcare, education, and public safety. Last week, tribal leaders from across the country and leaders of Native organizations testified during hearings in Washington on American Indian and Alaska Native programs in a subcommittee in the House Committee on Appropriations. In his written statement to the subcommittee, President of the National Congress of American Indians, Mark Macaro, said, "The Trump administration's early actions have generated confusion, fear, and real consequences throughout Indian country." Tribal leaders who testified urged for exemptions for tribes from Trump orders and for the federal government to uphold trust and treaty obligations. According to the Subcommittee of Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies, a third day of hearings was needed to accommodate around 100 tribes and tribal organizations. The action changing Denali to Mount McKinley prompted the Alaska State Legislature to urge the administration and the U.S. Board on Geographic Names to maintain the name Denali. And U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill that would officially designate the mountain as Denali, its Koyukon Athabasca name. During his address, President Trump, when talking about the war in Ukraine, referred to Senator Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas, which he uses as a jab at her. Tribes and Native groups have condemned Trump's use of the name, including the National Congress of American Indians. In 2017, NCAI said the name of Pocahontas should not be used as a slur, and it's inappropriate for anyone to use her name in a disparaging manner. Native women's advocates say it hurts the image of Native American women, adding the name is used by some as a stereotype for sexualizing them, pointing to Native women facing high rates of sexual violence and assaults in the U.S. A bill in the New Mexico legislature seeks to help address missing Native Americans in the state with a new alert system. According to the New Mexico Department of Justice, Native people account for 16% of missing persons in the state. Reporter Jeanette Didios has more.
Senate Bill 41 passed the Senate unanimously Saturday and would amend the Missing Person Information and Reporting Act to include a turquoise alert for Native Americans who are enrolled in a federally recognized tribe and go missing.
An alert would go out immediately across the state without having to wait the standard 48 hours for a missing person. The bill is sponsored by Democratic Senator Angel Charlie, who is Laguna and Diné. Democratic Representative Michelle Paulina Beta, who is Diné from Tohodule, is a co-sponsor. She says in her large rural district, it can take law enforcement a long time to respond to emergencies.
And I'm not talking a few hours, I'm talking days. And when someone goes missing or someone's endangered, we need these alerts to go out right away.
The bill passed with an amendment that refines the criteria for issuing an alert to high-risk cases. It's now in the House Government Elections and Indian Affairs Committee. The bill would require the Department of Public Safety to develop a plan for getting alerts out to law enforcement and the public. This bill does not include a direct appropriation, but a fiscal analysis states there may be recurring costs for state agencies to implement the alert system. At least three other states, including Washington, California, and Colorado, have passed similar legislation in recent years.
For National Native News, I'm Jeanette Didios.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Two Chinese sculptures in Portland's Old Town were removed this morning. Over 10 years since some in the Portland Chinese community called them culturally offensive. The statues were on Northwest Davis Street and Northwest 3rd Avenue, and they were installed in 2006. The statues were intended to symbolize the history and contributions of Portland's Chinese community, but some said they were stereotypical and demeaning towards Chinese heritage and history. The Old Town Community Association pushed for them to be removed and replaced for the past few years. Hung Shen Zhou is the president of the Oregon Chinese Coalition. Zhou told KGW, quote, "We've been waiting for this moment for a long time, for a long, long time. But we have never given up the hope. We hope that what has happened today, it could mark the turnaround for Chinatown. We really want to see real changes on the block from now on," end quote. Four other statues will be removed from Northwest Flanders Street next week. The Old Town Community Association has proposed replacing the statues with overhead Chinese lanterns instead.
On Monday, around 300 Portlanders picketed outside of Portland's Tesla dealership on South McAdam Avenue. They carried signs saying, "We didn't elect Elon," and "Stop Musk's coup." It's not the first time that Portlanders have rallied at the car dealership. There have been nearly weekly rallies since Trump took office, many of them under the banner of Tesla Takedown. Unelected Trump advisor Elon Musk is CEO of the car company. Under his leadership, the Department of Government Efficiency has made quick work of dismantling many pieces of the federal government. That's what protesters wanted to highlight, getting some supportive honks from passing drivers. Others wanted to hit Tesla where it hurts, the pocketbook. Tesla stocks have fallen since Musk took on an active role in the federal government. That's one reason some advocates are pushing for the Oregon Public Employee Retirement Fund, or PERS, to divest from Tesla. Currently, it holds over $100 million in Tesla stock.
The aftermath of natural disasters has sweeping consequences for impacted communities. After the wildfires in Los Angeles County in January, parents are concerned about the safety of sandboxes at parks and daycares, saying they may have been contaminated by ash. Susan Potter has more.
Concerned parents are pushing the authorities to help parks and daycares remove sand from sandboxes contaminated with ash after the LA fires. The city of Pasadena sent crews to remove the top 2 inches of sand from sandboxes in local parks. LA County recommends the same thing, but so far is not funding the remediation. Juana Sanchez, a mother of two toddlers in Eagle Rock, says she has been calling authorities to little avail.
I called my local park to hear what steps were taken to remove ash. I was told, well, our park has been raking the sand daily and power washing all hard surfaces. That just effectively disturbs ash so that it's no longer visible.
When asked about sand removal, the LA County Department of Health said no one was available for an interview. State Senator Sasha Perez, who represents areas affected by the Eaton fire, has called for more soil testing. Sanchez says small daycares that survived the fire may not be able to afford to clean up their sandboxes and play yards.
Can someone quarterback this? Can someone show leadership on this issue? And my concern is that right now it's like a political hot potato that nobody wants to touch and that we'd rather pretend doesn't exist.
Christina Alvarado with the Child Care Alliance of Los Angeles says many small daycares that serve low-income communities of color are facing big bills in their quest to reopen safely.
So in terms of cleaning, there are some grants available. We are also going to be giving some stipends to child care providers as much as we were able to obtain from donors. We've been talking to some of the big toy manufacturers to see if they can donate sand for the sandboxes.
The Child Care Alliance has also distributed buckets of cleaning supplies and air purifiers to daycares downwind of the fire zone. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants to start asking the right questions.
At our library, there are 65 holds on 14 copies of 1984. Is it 13 o'clock yet? Why did Ukraine start the war with Russia? How did the Democrats control the 2020 election, denying Trump his victory, and why didn't they do it again last year? Can the government be made leaner without being meaner? Will it go from bloated to anorexic, with a fast-acting osteoporosis making it unable to take a step? The U.S. must promise Russia some new territory and seize our cyber operations against it to get Russia to negotiate peace. Only a stable genius can understand why it's more important to have relations with Russia than Europe, which has an economy 10 times larger. Now that the House of Representatives has become the House of Rubber Stamps, wouldn't it be more efficient just to let their terms expire? Think of all the money we'll save if we never have another election. No one elected Elon Musk, and look at what a fantastic representative of corporate greed job he's doing. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Anna Wilcox, Dan Raphael, and myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Judith Ruiz Branch, Suzanne Potter. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Sherry Meredith. All of our KBOO programs, including Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We're talking immigrant justice and the Sanctuary Promise Act with Cedra Pearson from the Rural Organizing Project.